Joining Dollar Shave Club for me was a no-brainer. It's made my life so much easier, and I'm sure it'll make yours easier too. Since I joined, I don't need to go to the store anymore to buy razors, or choose between price and quality to get an amazing shave anymore. I can honestly say that I'm a big fan of the club. DollarShaveClub.com delivers high-quality razors right to my door for less than what I used to pay. There's no reason to deal with the hassle of going to the store to buy expensive razors when you join the club. Just go to DollarShaveClub.com and pick a razor that works for you from their line of amazing blades. I personally use their executive razor, and I always get an amazing shave and never have to set foot in a store to buy razors again. Over 3 million members like me love Dollar Shave Club. The quality, the value, and convenience of Dollar Shave Club can't be beat. And so right now, you can get your first month of the club for as little as $5. And after that, it's only a few bucks a month. There's no reason not to join. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/felon. That's dollarshaveclub.com/felon.
This episode of Felon may contain disturbing content, including descriptions of violence and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
This episode contains references to people and places covered in episodes 6 and 7. I recommend listening to both those episodes prior to continuing with episode 9.
Got the bucket and the window was open already, so I pushed it open. Stood on and climbed through up here. He was there snoring, and I kicked it like that, and he woke up, whack. I was feeling lonely. Hatred and anger, fucking. But before, when I was doing, loneliness as well. I felt wanted him to get me first.
Why were you hoping that?
Fucking hate my life. If you can call it life.
As presented in episode 6, Mark Van Crevel, a quiet 19-year-old, randomly murdered and savagely mutilated two men. Episode 7 detailed the investigation that led to his arrest. The extreme nature of the crime shook the nation and sent the local community of Wollongong and its surrounding areas into a panic. Prior to Mark's arrest, those within the area lived under the looming threat that a vicious serial killer was still on the loose. As the evidence mounted against Mark Van Crevel, police knew that they had a watertight case against him, and with his arrest, trial, and sentence, Mark would soon be removed from society. But it would not be long before a violent murder would shake the suburb of Albion Park once again. Friday, the 18th of August, 2000. 2 weeks after Mark Van Crevel was tried and sentenced, police were called to a home in the suburb of Albion Park. It was a home that they had visited before. The scene that greeted them inside the master bedroom seems reminiscent of the horror inflicted by Mark Van Crevel. In the room, a man was discovered kneeling beside the bed. He was slumped over, with his head and chest resting on the mattress, with his arms hanging alongside his torso. He was covered in blood, and he was naked. His back and head had received extensive wounds. 25 chop wounds in total to the neck and head had left his neck partly severed. There were also multiple stab wounds and lacerations inflicted to the torso. Blood covered the bedding and curtains. At the foot of the bed, close to the victim's body, lying side by side, were a hatchet, a large kitchen knife, and a fire poker, all of which were covered in blood. It was clear to investigators that they were dealing with a violent offender who had spent some time at the scene prior to fleeing. The knife and fire poker were identified as belonging to the victim, as they appeared to match sets found in the premises. Clear shoe impressions, created by blood, were found in the home, and detectives hoped they could use these as evidence in the case that they had the opportunity to match it to a suspect. The shoe prints also gave the detectives an idea of the offender's movements that led away from the body to a set of fireplace tools, of which one was missing, then back to the victim's room. The prints then led to a child's bedroom and to an open window from which the attacker had made their exit. It was determined that this was also the entry point. In what appeared to be a stroke of luck, the young girl, who would normally be sleeping in the room, happened to be in another room that night. At the time of the attack, the daughter of the victim had been in a nearby room sleeping in the same bed as her young daughter. Upon hearing the attack through the wall, the two had held each other tight, fearing that they may be next. The daughter of the victim described her experience to police.
I was woken by the noises, and I'm like, and was that frightened, and I put the quilt over me, head, and put it over their head, so it was all hidden.
In tracking the offender's movements, traces of blood found on the carpet and door handle confirmed that the attacker had walked to the door where the mother and daughter had lay huddled under a blanket. As soon as it seemed like the attacker had fled, the daughter of the victim and her daughter ran to their car, and once within the safety of the vehicle, made their way to the Warilla police station to sound the alarm. It didn't take long for police who attended the gruesome scene to determine that the victim was deceased. The woman who had reported the crime and her now deceased father both bore a surname that was of great interest to police. Their family name was Van Crevel. The woman was Mark Van Crevel's sister, Belinda. The victim was his father, Jack. Since the notorious murders carried out by Mark, the Van Crevel family had been thrown in the media spotlight, and they were no strangers to talking to police. Belinda Van Crevel assisted investigators with their inquiries, taking part in a number of recorded interviews. An early theory that she came up with implied that Mark had something to do with his father's murder.
I don't want to get Mark in trouble, but maybe he is covering for someone and they said that they'd do this for him. Or maybe he's asked someone, to do it.
Well, having said that, then who would you think he would get to do it?
Oh, I don't know.
In following this line of inquiry, police found it significant to note that within Mark's book, titled A to Z of Serial Killers, along with David O'Hearn and Frank Arkell, his father Jack Van Crevel's name was written. During his trial, Mark had expressed a disdain for his father Jack, and had even implicated him in carrying out acts of physical and sexual abuse upon him when he was younger. A theory was put forward that potentially Mark had organized a hit on his father from behind bars. In response to this, police analysed Mark's phone calls and visitor records, and it was soon determined that he had had very limited contact with anyone outside the jail walls. But among a small list of individuals who had recent contact with him was his sister, Belinda, and another man. This man was no stranger to police. It was 21-year-old Keith Schreiber, Mark's best friend and ex-housemate. The theory that Mark was behind the attack was not ruled out by his sister Belinda, who went on to implicate Keith as a possible suspect. This was worth noting to investigators, as when they had discussed Schreiber with Jack Van Crevel during the investigation of Mark, Jack had not spoken kindly of Keith and had suggested that it was Keith's influence on Mark that had led him to carry out his crimes. With this being their strongest lead, investigating officers went about tracking Schreiber's movements just prior to and on the night in question. With his links to the Van Crevel family, Keith Schreiber was again a main person of interest in a murder case. Police quickly located him and made an arrest. When arrested, Schreiber was wearing a pair of Blundstone work boots. These boots were seized and quickly analysed for a comparison to the bloody footprints found at the Van Crevel home. This comparison came back with a positive match. When interviewed by detectives, Schreiber shared three words that would seal his fate.
Is there anything you can tell us about the incident that occurred last night with Mr. Jack Van Crevel?
I'm done it.
As the interviewers quizzed him for a motive, Keith Schreiber gave an emotional insight into his motivation.
Can you tell me why you did it?
That's a good question. I was depressed and angry. He should pay for what he'd done to Mark and Lena.
The attack, it seemed, was motivated by wanting revenge for Mark and Belinda. Mark had made the claim in court that his father Jack had sexually abused him. The anger that Keith felt towards Jack erupted when he attacked him.
When this was happening, did you say anything to Jack?
Yeah, sort of for revenge for Mark. I said, and told him, when I turned the light on, I told him, this is for Mark. Fuck, I'm a pedophile bastard. You'll never molest another kid again.
Following Schreiber's emotional confession, he was taken to the Van Crevel home, where investigators carried out a walkthrough with him. He was able to provide intimate knowledge of the home, including where he had collected Jack's hatchet from, the window that was used as a point of entry, and his movements inside the home the night of the murder. His description of what occurred on that night was that he collected the hatchet from its storage place near a pile of timber. He made his way to the side window that he had discovered to be open, and he stood on a bucket to make his way inside.
Got the bucket, and the window was open already, so I pushed it open. Stood on, and climbed through.
Okay, we're now in the deceased Jack Van Crevel's bedroom. Can you tell me what happened when you came in here?
Schreiber then made his way into Jack's room and stood over him beside the bed.
Up here, and he was there snoring, and I kicked it like that.
And that's what made the noise?
Yeah.
It was while he was making his way beside the bed that Schreiber bumped the bedside table and Jack stirred to the noise. As he rolled to look for the source, Schreiber raised the hatchet and brought it down on Jack's head.
And he woke up. Whack.
As this attack occurred, Belinda and her young daughter Tia were in the next room, listening to every sound and every scream. Keith told his interviewers that when the attack was over, he stopped by Belinda's room, looked in on them, and then made his way out of the house. It was then that Belinda fled with her daughter to alert the authorities. It was during ongoing interviews with Belinda that police noted that she seemed quite aloof about her father's murder and did not seem to be a daughter in mourning. This combined with her scathing comments about her father during the trial of her brother, in which she indicated it should be Jack that should be in jail and not Mark, made police very suspicious of her.
He drove him to do what he did. He's the one that should be in jail.
How do you feel about your father's death now?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Not sad as yet, but it'll happen.
It was noted by investigators that in Belinda's room at the time of the attack, there was a mobile phone. This phone had not been used to dial for help while her and her daughter listened in on the attack on her father. It was also noted that she had not approached neighbours to use their phone upon leaving the house, but even more mysterious was the fact that she had driven to Warilla Police Station, which was approximately a 15-minute drive, when she could have travelled to the police station in Albion Park in around 5 minutes instead. Police were faced with two options. Belinda was either in too much of a panic state to think clearly, or her motivation for this behaviour was something far more sinister. Police now had two persons of interest, both of whom had expressed animosity towards Jack Van Crevel. It was also noticed by detectives who attended the trial of Mark Van Crevel that Keith and Belinda seemed closer than being just friends. As investigators explored the possibility that Belinda was involved, they quizzed Keith Schreiber if he and Belinda were or had been in a relationship.
Is there anything you care to tell me about that?
It's irrelevant.
Is it correct?
Sort of.
Investigators established that the last person to see Keith leading up to when the murder occurred was Belinda. Belinda told police that the day before the murder, she had met with Keith and the pair had travelled towards the jail where Mark was based to pay him a visit. But they were unable to see him on that particular day. It soon came to light that the pair had spent the remainder of the day together. During this time, Belinda shared with Keith some accusations about her father, that he had molested her and Mark, and even her young daughter, Tia.
Jack molested Mark. And Tia's been, his granddaughter has been saying, coming out with a few weird things.
In following up this line of inquiry, police interrogated Keith further, following which he revealed a piece of the puzzle that made everything fall into place.
Did she ask you to do it?
Yeah, I know she wanted him done.
She wanted him done?
Mm-hmm.
In talking of Belinda's feelings towards Jack, Keith mentions that she wanted him done. With this confession, police set about obtaining evidence against Belinda Van Creville. On Thursday the 3rd of May 2001, 8 months after the murder of Jack Van Creville, police again interviewed Belinda with a startling revelation that they had been informed of. Jack's wife had approached them with the news that around the time of Jack's death, she had heard rumours that Belinda had offered Keith Schreiber $2,000 to murder her father.
Have you ever paid Keith any money?
No. For what?
Since your father's death, have you ever given him any money?
No, I haven't.
Belinda denied ever offering or giving Keith money. Following this interview, police visited the home of Belinda Van Creville with a search warrant. During this search, police located stubs from a number of money orders. These orders were followed up and traced directly to the bank account of Keith Schreiber, an account he used since he had been incarcerated. Police also located letters addressed to Belinda, in which Keith is discussing money that she has transferred him and items he has spent the money on in prison.
Keith?
Mm-hmm.
Is that all right,
okay,
Keith Schreiber?
That's, obviously.
In the letter, Keith's talking about, I should have bought a radio with that money, but all I got was a kettle for $30 and the rest on tobacco and drinks and food. This is the person that killed your father, and you're sending him money.
Yeah, and?
Did you think that was a bit strange?
No, not really, no.
Okay.
I'm still friends with him, I talk to him today.
And what was your relationship with Keith Schreiber at the time your dad was murdered?
It was a normal sort of relationship, just friends, you know.
So you weren't going out with each other?
No.
And you'd never gone out with Keith Schreiber?
No, I never even thought about it.
You ever had any relationships with him, sexual-wise or any nature like that?
I won't answer that. I don't think that's got anything to do with this.
It's actually got a lot to do with it, because it's investigating the murder of your father.
Yeah, but what's sex got to do with someone being murdered?
We're just trying to work out what relationship you had with the person who murdered your father.
And, wouldn't make a difference, would it?
Well, it may make a difference to our investigation.
Why is that?
Well, that's what we have to work out.
Right, okay then. Yeah, right, what was the next question?
Belinda, this letter addressed to Keith, do you agree that that's your handwriting?
Some of these letters also contained romantic sentiments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You discuss here about your closeness to Keith. It says, I miss you heaps, you see, Keith. The thing I love the most is that no one really knows how much we trust and care about each other. I mean, I've been so close to you for how many years, and no one could make up that they've done more for me than what you have. I'll always look up to you, and no one will ever come as anywhere near as close to me as you are.
So you were in a physical relationship?
I have been, yeah.
You told us before that you'd never had or you hadn't been.
No, I said I didn't want to tell you.
Is there anything you're prepared to talk about?
Yeah.
What's the situation with your relationship?
I had sex with him.
The evidence obtained at Belinda's home and during police interviews with her painted the picture that she had used money, their relationship, and the accusation that her father was a pedophile to coerce Keith into murdering him. The latter probably being the most motivating factor based on the fact that Keith had been molested by a teacher as a child. It was also revealed that Keith was homeless and in a disturbed mental state at the time he committed the fatal attack. It was suggested that Belinda used these factors to manipulate him. This evidence obtained by police was enough to go to trial, and it was determined in court that Belinda Van Crevel was guilty of playing an active role in the death of her father. She was sentenced to 6 years for her part in the murder. Keith Andrew Schreiber was sentenced to be imprisoned for 16 years. This was set with a non-parole period of 12 years. In August of 2012, Schreiber was granted parole after serving a minimum of 12 years, but he was soon sent back to jail in November after it was found he could not adapt to normal community life and obey directions from his parole officer, which were part of the conditions of his parole. After being jailed for 6 years for the charge of soliciting Keith Schreiber to kill her father, Belinda Van Crevel was released. But in 2014, Van Crevel made headlines when she repeatedly stabbed her partner, Marshall Gould, 5 times in the neck, leg, and arm.
What were you feeling when you were doing this?
Loneliness. I was feeling lonely.
You said earlier that you'd...
Yeah, fucking hatred and anger, fucking. But before, when I was doing it, so, yeah. Loneliness as well. I felt fucking, yeah, sort of wanted him to get me first.
Why were you hoping that?
I just fucking hate my life. If you can call it life.
Thanks for listening. You're probably sick of hearing this by now, but if you have enjoyed the show, please do rate and review Fallon on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're looking to get in touch or stay in the loop with all things Fallon, just search for Fallon True Crime on all social media platforms. There's even a Fallon discussion group on Facebook called Friends of Fallon True Crime, so give that a search and stop by and say hi. This episode was made possible by Dollar Shave Club. To take advantage of their special offer for Fallon listeners, head over to dollarshaveclub.com/felon. This week's podcast recommendation is Married to Murder, so please do stick around and check out their promo.
Hey.
Hey, Cassie.
Do you want to tell people about our podcast?
Oh my gosh, I've been waiting all day to tell people about our podcast.
What's it called?
It's called Married to Murder.
What's it about?
It's couples who murder each other or murder together.
Oh my god, that sounds so awesome. It's Where can you listen to it?
iTunes or anywhere podcasts are available.
Anywhere a podcast is available?
Anywhere.
Get out. I can't wait to go listen myself.
Well, hurry up. I'll time you.
Okay.